Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Hello once again, podcast and ODR audience, and welcome to this iCoder podcast once more. I'm Ian McDuff, your host for the series, and I'm speaking with you, as always, from Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. In this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined for the first time by colleagues in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and in fact, in the same city as me. And we're still doing this by video and by remote control. We're just across town. Today, I'm with Kerry Morris and Isabel Edgerton. A few words by way of introduction. Kerry is the ODR Establishment Project Manager at the Domain Names Commission here in New Zealand. She joined DNC in July 2021 to help set up the online dispute resolution program. She's a mediator who believes strongly in helping people resolve their own disputes. She's a fellow in mediation of the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators in the UK and of the Arbitrators and Mediators Institute of New Zealand. She's a highly experienced family dispute resolution provider, which probably comes in handy for the domain name stuff, I imagine.
Yes.
Not all your skills would. Kerry is instrumental in leading the FDR Family Dispute Resolution Services for New Zealand service provider for many years. She's a trained synergy conflict coach and a keen writer on all things on dispute resolution. And those of you who will listen to this probably have seen some of Kerry's writing on the mediate.com site. Isabel is the domain name policy lead at Internet NZ. And was interim domain name commissioner in 2022 and has expertise in regulation, management, and control of domain names. Prior to joining the domain name industry, Isabel was practiced law for over 20 years and more recently as legal counsel for the New Zealand Police, and has significant expertise in managing risk and a great passion for consumer protection. So, welcome, both of you. It's really good to see both of you. Well, I can see you, others won't later, but to hear you. Kerry, over to you for a second.
Thank you, Ian. Tēnā koutou katoa. E hara ahua e te mare. Nō kua te rāna oku te puna mātua. Kua Lower Hutt te kaina. Kua Hong Kong and Germany te puna whenua tupu. Kia Petoni o Noho Anu. Kia kai taka wānga aho. Ko Kerry Morris, tuku inua, ko rerea, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Translator, that means I greet you all. I am not Māori. My ancestors come from Scotland. My family home was in Lower Hutt. I also grew up in Hong Kong and Germany. I live in Petone. I'm a mediator. My name is Kerry Morris. Thank you. I greet you. I greet your ancestors and I greet your descendants.
Kia ora, Kerry. Thank you very much for that. And obviously for most listeners, the Pepeha is unfamiliar. And as you will understand it, two forms of greeting. One is the mihi, where you simply introduce yourself, or mihi,
yes.
Saying who you are. But what you've given us, Kerry, is stronger than that, by way of pepeha, because it's very much a form of connecting yourself to the rest of us. So I appreciate that. And it seems particularly fitting for people in the mediation business and in this online field that we talk about connection. And so I appreciate that. I didn't realize you grew up in Germany. We should be speaking in German. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yes.
We've got some really interesting questions to deal with, to find out about the Domain Names Commission, the online dispute resolution function of the DNC. But can either or both of you say something by way of introduction about the scene here in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
Yeah, I'd be happy to start that off if you like, Ian. So it was great to start with a pepeha, I think, because that sort of sets the scene a bit in New Zealand, and that understanding that we're a bicultural nation, and that New Zealand, or Aotearoa New Zealand, is a country that's founded on a treaty. So it's called Te Tiriti o Waitangi, the Treaty of Waitangi. So this is a treaty between the British Crown and our First Nations people, Māori. and underpins our legislation. So an example of how this works in practice for us as dispute resolution people is when we're designing a service for dispute resolution, we need to consider how our dispute resolution services work for Māori and ensure that we're not creating a service that just works for in a white person's or a Pākehā, we say in New Zealand, white person's way of providing dispute resolution, but that we promote and allow a tikanga or Māori way of working processes for Māori. And we also, we don't create it for them, we allow Māori to create their services. That's an empowering and way of working best for Māori. It's a partnership way of working.
Thank you. A couple of observations about that. One is maybe we should have prefaced this, or I could have, by saying, as I haven't had needed to in previous podcasts, that Māori is one of the three official languages in New Zealand.
Yes.
And, and listeners will note that we are referring not to New Zealand, but to Aotearoa New Zealand. And it's become much more the convention to use both names, the Māori name and the I suppose the Pākehā European name, where New Zealand has been named after an obscure province in the Netherlands. But that too is a source of contention, because there's much debate about renaming some of our cities, but we perhaps not, we'll stay away from that for the moment.
Yes.
Come back to that. But that's, thank you for that, because that sets the scene, because one of the things that your comment reminded me of Kerry, is the observation that's been made by Māori when we look at setting up systems which are bicultural, is from the Māori side saying, nothing about me without me.
Yes, that's right.
Have to be included, or Māori have to be included in decision making. So it's the key part of, if design is a key part of setting up these dispute resolution processes, that's a core cultural element. I'm really happy you raised that at the outset. So thank you for that. Isabel, anything to add to that at this stage?
No, thanks for opening with that, Kerry. It's really important to us at Internet NZ.
To which you've moved. So where, in your view, both of you, where does ODR fit into that system? Because you've referred to the New Zealand context. Where are you seeing, we'll come back to the DNC in a moment, but where does ODR fit on your horizons, both for Internet NZ and for DNC?
Well, with online dispute resolution, where we see it falling is in accessibility. So we've got here the Aotearoa Best Practice Dispute Resolution Framework, and one of the criteria is that services are accessible to all. So when we go into more of the detail of how we designed online dispute resolution, and the features which Kerry's going to talk about later, I think that we'll see how online dispute resolution in this time and in this place falls into supporting accessibility to dispute resolution.
Sure.
Kerry? Yeah, I agree. I think one of the great things about ODR is that it can create pathways, and many people in your podcast have spoken about this before, and that ODR can really remove many obstacles that can prevent people from coming to or approaching a dispute resolution service. And if we can design ODR platforms that just remove one more obstacle to allow people to resolve their dispute, we know most of us in the dispute resolution world know that, when you live with a dispute in your life, it's going to ooze out into other areas of your life and affect your relationships and everything like that. And so all the little things that we can do by making things just less difficult and easier and removing obstacles is going to make a difference for our society and for children and for families and workplaces, and it's going to have a positive effect. And I think ODR is a way that we can do that.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess in the areas in which you work, which are particularly tech related, ODR is an appropriate form of doing things. But can I just throw a small spanner in the works here with a question, which I don't know that you anticipated. We both said that ODR can remove obstacles. Is there a degree, on the other hand, to which ODR and the degree to which we rely on ODR creates obstacles because of the reliance on technology?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that some people find it really daunting to try and use the platform even to manage their dispute and not have something that's face-to-face. Mm. And there are some of the feedback we received when we were doing the pilot is people thought our invitations were, they were being scammed. So there is problems with and challenges with ODR, especially while it's not mainstream dispute resolution and it's not supported in general government dispute resolution services and things like that. So people, it's unusual. It's not a standard dispute resolution service, well, particularly in New Zealand. And so people don't know about it. They don't really know how to use it. It's not a common dispute resolution service yet.
Yeah, and not everybody has easy access to the suitable technology. The Department of Internal Affairs is doing work on that issue of access. You and I, and probably everyone else out there, including some of the more experienced people who are listening to this, will know that the times when you've driven absolutely demented by trying to access something online and nothing works, and you think that I must be the stupidest person on the planet, and more that you feel totally alone. There's nowhere to get help.
And if it doesn't work on, you know, there can be frustrations if your browser doesn't work or if you seem to be getting blocked for some reason, mm-hmm. and your password doesn't work or you've forgotten your, like all those little frustrations.
Yeah.
Well, I think I saw a thing on TV the other day, they're called minor stresses that all add up in your life that make you want to throw it all away and just... Yes. Talk to a human.
It's what in Singapore used to be referred to as high-level trash. Sometimes people decide to get rid of the TV by biffing it out of the 16th floor window.
I just wanted to add, I think it was a great feature that we did have the coach at the Domain Name Commission to provide support, and also our provider, a mediation, had the technical support for people who were having problems with the platform, and I think that's really important. And it's also potentially seeing ODR as a part of the toolbox and maybe not the only solution. It was interesting to see in the survey feedback forms a range of user comments on how easy they found it. And I do have to say that some of the younger people really loved the technology, and there does seem to be a bit of a generational feature to what people want to access. But that's where we felt with having the coach that sort of tried to bridge any problems.
Mm-hmm. There's two key elements that have been raised so far, aren't there? One is the design of whatever system you're using, and obviously the element you raised there, Kerry, which is the cultural element, but design for accessibility. It's access to the system for access to systems. And the other is coaching. And the coaching presumably also will help redesign when you find out things don't work as well as they might. Can we back up a bit, and could either or both of you say something about the foundation formation of the DNC? Because folks out there in the listening world will know about Domain Name Commissions, but not ours.
Yes, Thanks. I'll pack that, Ian. I did want to just say it's a real privilege to be on the show, but I haven't had a dispute resolution background. But through the employment of Kerry Morris, that was the first time the Domain Name Commission actually had a professional mediator on the staff. So that's given us the confidence to move into this space. Just about the Domain Name Commission itself, it's quite a unique industry self-regulator. It sounds, some people get confused, they think it's part of a government department, but it's part of the industry, and it's a subsidiary of Internet NZ, who has the responsibility to manage .nz. Some of the listeners will be familiar with .au, which is the Australian top-level domain. Then there's .ca, Canada, .uk. But a lot of people out there will be familiar more with .com. .com is what's called a general top-level domain. It's not associated with a country. But .nz, like some of those other top-level domains I've just described, they're actually associated with the country. And so the way that those top-level domains are managed can reflect on that country. And so the responsibility of ensuring that that domain space is managed fairly and safely is a responsibility that Internet NZ works with the Domain Name Commission. So essentially the commission provides oversight on .nz domain names, and the dispute service provides an avenue for people who believe that someone else holding a particular domain name is holding it unfairly. An interesting feature of the domain name space is that, unlike, for example, applying for a trademark, there's no pre-approval. So I myself could register ianmcduff.co.nz if the letters, if the letters, oh, you've already got it. Okay, that's good, but I can't. So that what you've drawn out there is it's a first come, first served basis. So if you enter any particular string of letters and numbers, you can register that if no one else has done previously. So what we find is, because of the low barrier to registration, it's important that there's a means by which people can dispute and raise an unfair registration. So if I had managed to register Ian McDuff, you could come to the Domain Name Commission and say that's an unfair registration, and we would provide a dispute resolution service for you. The other features that the Domain Name Commission, the functions are to supervise the market and to give oversight of how the domain names are bought and sold. So that's a separate part of our business.
A couple of questions there, because that's very helpful. I'm aware, just to take the ianmcduff.co.nz or ianmcduff.nz, I'm aware that there is another Ian McDuff who lives just up the coast from Wellington, and there have been occasions of identity confusion. And is there any way in which that other person with same name could say, it's an unfair registration because I'm not that person, or I'm being misrepresented, or is there, can you do anything other than simply say, I got here first, and too bad?
So in our dispute resolution policy, there's a number of means by which you can challenge a registration, and it is partly to do with the way it was registered and the intent with which it was registered and the use of it. Because of my previous history with working for the police for so long, I can just say that a name is not a very good identifier, and people do believe they own their name, but in fact, names are very, very common. So the idea that any particular Ian McDuff should have the ownership of .co.nz is probably something that people feel strongly about, but it doesn't have a foundation. So that's where you need the two elements. You need the right and a name, and that the registration in the hands of the other person is unfair. Yeah. And there is quite a complex group of rules in the dispute resolution policy that is adjudicated on by senior trademark lawyers if the alternative dispute resolution process, which is our ODR, doesn't work out. One thing that I think is wonderful is that through ODR and mediation, people can hear a wider range of issues, feelings, and grievances that might bring a more ethical and fair response. But if that doesn't arise, then you go into the adjudication, which has got some quite strict rules. Okay. We find in the ODR matters have come to light, which is that, you know, people might feel they want to own a name because it was a grandfather's business. And when the other party hears that and they hear that, you know, the inspiration for the claim, as we all know in mediation, magic can happen, which wouldn't really arise through the pure adjudication process.
That assumes goodwill when people come to the mediation process. But if, as you say, there's nothing magical about the ownership of a name, and I got up early enough one morning and registered meganmarkle.co.uk, nothing to stop me from doing that? And then sitting there on that name?
So I'm not going to delve into what you can do in .uk.
Okay, that's not... we won't go a top-level domain name.
Yeah, it is first come, first served. Yeah. So people can actually invest in domain names.
Okay, so there is a market in that. Yeah. Okay, so let me backing up a question to, because you're now with Internet NZ, who is Internet NZ?
So Internet NZ runs the registry, and so they have responsibility for running the domain name system and keeping the records for who has each domain name.
Right.
And also who is entitled to connect to the registry and sell the domain names.
Sure. And again, who owns, who set up, it's not a government agency, it's an industry agency?
It is an industry agency, and it's a charity, non-governmental organisation. Sure. The important thing also to note with Internet NZ is that the money generated from its business all goes back into the community. And when we just started, we talked about accessibility, and you talked about the Department of Internal Affairs looking into that. Internet NZ, through its public impact arm, puts its money back into the community to improve accessibility. It distributes a lot of grant money back into the community.
Great. Okay. And one probably naive question, then we can move on to your ODR system. Is there anything stopping someone who lives outside New Zealand from registering a .nz name?
Yes, there isn't a geographical requirement in New Zealand. What our data shows us is that 90% of .nz domain names are owned by people either in New Zealand and Australia. Okay. Last time I looked, it was 81% New Zealand owned and around 9 domiciled in Australia. So we do see the what is now, I think, 755,000 or so domain names, largely owned by New Zealanders. Yeah.
That's 755,000 .nz names.
Yes.
That would take quite a lot of searching, wouldn't it? That's intriguing. I never stop learning. You mentioned at the outset of your comments now, Isabel, bringing Kerry on board for the dispute resolution side, and can we turn to your specifically your ODR system, the online system for dealing with domain name disputes? Can you lead us into that, Kerry?
Absolutely. So we piloted an online dispute resolution service for our domain names, which is still running. It's an opt-in for parties at the moment. So they can currently go through the standard non-ODR, which is complaint response reply, or they can come through ODR. And what we actually did was, at the same time as piloting domain name disputes, we also piloted, we also decided to run another process called our conflicted names dispute resolution service, which I'll get Isabel to talk to. So I'll just put that to the side for a moment because it's quite a complex little project we did. Through the domain names dispute pilot, we found people did get their domain names resolved. And we used, and we're still using, iMediation to host our platform. So they designed our platform specifically for us. They did a great job. They created for us specifically the first time a e-negotiation tool. We had all our documents auto-populated with parties' names and details, mediators' names. Parties uploaded their own evidence, all their own information into the system, created new, unique tokens to invite the second party, the respondent, to the matter. The parties can add lawyers, representatives, or support people to the mediation. The mediator can book the meeting time online, video chats, things like that. All the settlement agreements are signed online. They can be signed live in the meeting room, downloaded. You can add bank account details. All the terms and conditions are entered online. It's a real true ODR platform. It's not just a Zoom and then come away and sign things and send things out afterwards. So what we're finding is the hardest thing is, with most things, is engaging the respondent. So we get the applicant or the claimant is generally quite, you know, keen to use ODR. And with most dispute resolution, the respondent can be a bit reluctant or a bit, what is ODR? Why am I getting these emails? What is this all about? So that's what we're finding is the trickier thing. But we are getting more and more people wanting to use ODR. It is much quicker to get through the processes.
I'd switched off my microphone there. I've got to switch on the microphone. The iMediation is the Australia-based group. Which again is the wondrous ways in which online stuff can work, because it's and I presume there are no jurisdictional issues. I mean, it's a kind of neutral platform, isn't it? Because
So they've created it to fit in with, you know, our legislation and what we need.
Right.
Yeah.
And am I guess right to say that there's a fee payable to iMediation, or as would be to anybody who provides the platform, or is it you've paid an upfront fee to them? How does that work?
We paid an upfront fee to design the service, design the platform, and then we pay an ongoing fee. Our service for the public is free. So parties can use the service for free, mediation, which is part of our community service to support dispute resolution and support people, and which is fantastic that we can do that for people.
So that's free mediation.
Free mediation. Oh. Yeah. So which if people... Yeah, if people don't resolve at mediation, they do need to pay. Isabel was talking about the adjudication. So if they don't resolve at mediation, they do need to pay for that expert determination. But mediation is free.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where some of us came into mediation 30 plus years ago. It's the idea it was a low cost or no cost process.
Yeah.
But it's moved on from that just a fraction.
Yeah, it's unusual to see it these days.
It is. And congratulations on maintaining that. So, but funded from within domain names.
It is, yeah, that's right.
Thank you. Isabel, you were going to add something on another part of the process.
Yes, I'll just touch on the conflicted names process. In fact, the number of disputes regarding someone claiming an unfair registration happened to be only around 15 to 20 a year. So when we introduced this pilot, we had quite low numbers of uptake. But the big part of the story was that we ran a more unique and rare process through the system, which involved inviting around 2,200 registrants to participate. And we had 806 parties sign up to use the platform. That was to resolve a process that we just did in 2022. It's not an ongoing service, and it was to see if we could get some settlement of conflicted names. I will just tell you briefly what a conflicted name is.
Please do. Yep.
And that is, back in around 2014, domain names in New Zealand could be registered directly at the second level. So you talked before about ianmcduff.nz.
Yep.
When the release of the domain names directly at the second level came out, there was a sunset period in which the person who owned the .co.nz had a preferential right to register it directly. So if you had owned then ianmcduff.co.nz, you would have had the preferential right to register ianmcduff.nz.
Which I think I did.
Yeah. And where the conflicts arose is if someone had one of the other second level space names. So here in New Zealand, we've got .co.nz, we've got .org.nz, we've got .school.nz, and altogether there's around nine, including a unique domain namespace .iwi.nz.
It's also .kiwi, isn't there?
There is .kiwi as well. So I think there's around 12 altogether. What happened was there was a group of conflicted domain names where both the owner of the .org.nz and .co.nz wanted to obtain the name directly at .nz.
Right.
And at the moment, there's around 1,440 conflicted domain names still in existence. So what we did is we had a completely different flow where we invited the parties to the conflicted name to use the platform to resolve that dispute. What was quite unique about that is you actually had to engage two parties. So you didn't have a member of the public initiating it, so which only requires to get going the respondent engaging. Here we had the Domain Name Commission initiating the matter, and you needed to get both cold parties to accept it. So we knew that we were going to have a relatively low number of both parties uptake. But what we have seen is around 100 conflicted domain names resolved during the period that those invitations went out. It was also a great example to see how the communications could be improved during that period, because we had such a large number through. What we observed is that, yeah, you can learn a lot through getting feedback from a lot of people. So during the course of that pilot over 8 months, we learned a lot, and we worked with a mediation to modify the platform.
Are you able to say whether any percentage of those conflicted domain names were, and have, how do I choose my words, malevolent? They were deliberately chosen to create mayhem?
I couldn't make a comment on that. No. Kerry and I both weren't at the commission in 2014, but the way it was managed was that there was a period you had to have owned the domain name back in around 2012 to actually enter into the conflict set. So that was managed by having a cutoff so that people couldn't have registered a domain to get into the conflict set because it was not known that the release of .nz would happen, so it couldn't be abused in that way.
Oh, good. Because I imagine, I'm sure there's a great potential for that kind of intentional, we used to refer to cyber squatting. I don't know whether there's still an issue of cyber squatting, of deliberately acquiring and buying names, and I don't know whether that's part of your brief to deal with those issues.
That is some of the reason why we've got the very easy to access dispute resolution service. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And the impression you both have, it's working well, the online system you have.
It is working well, particularly when we run it along, when at the moment I'm using both our standard dispute resolution service and our ODR service. And in terms of administering the services, it is much easier from an internal process and workload administratively. It is the time involved is much easier. I think learning and understanding that we will need to continue to maintain and listen to feedback from parties and mediators and continue to make improvements. Otherwise, we will end up with something in 2 years' time that's out of date and out of sync as well. So it's that constant improvement and learning to make it relevant and keep it relevant.
I was going to go on to that sort of question because, where you began with the idea of design, particularly with cultural relevance, one of the things about this process and about mediation is you can learn from, not so much from your mistakes, because even though maybe some, but you learn from experience and from user feedback. So you'd have gone in with some assumptions, designed a process, and what have you found that you needed to change along the way in the last year or so, or couple of years?
We've actually removed the e-negotiation function. That hasn't been something that people have really taken up. For the conflicted names, it was used a bit, but not for the domain name disputes. People want to go to mediation, which we thought people would want the e-negotiation for mediation for domain name disputes, but they didn't want to use it. So we've removed that from our standard platform. The other things we've learned is it's got to be intuitive. The more intuitive it is, the less clicks, the more people will use it. So the reducing the amount of notifications and emails people get is actually better. Sometimes we think that more information is better, but actually less information is actually better as well.
Yeah. And less on the screen. Even if I look at the screen in front of me now and you look at the screen you're facing, there's too much going on.
Yes, and absolutely.
And the less is there, one big red button and one big green button is about all you
need. That's right. Yeah.
Talk here, stop here.
That's right.
So is that part of the design too, that you're making it as user-friendly as possible?
Yeah. Making the language New Zealand language as well. So not using claimant, defendant. What would we use in New Zealand? So we would like a really Kiwi, Aotearoa New Zealand system. So our emails, our invitations are kia ora, tēnā koe. So they're using our te reo Māori language in our invitations and in a way we invite people to mediation. It's not a really formal invitation. It is a New Zealand way of inviting people onto the platform and then trying to incorporate that in how we work with in on the platform itself. So, and Mediation have been really good at understanding how we would like that to be and putting that into the system for us. I think we're not really in any way near creating an AI-based platform where that will improve outcomes based on AI. We're not in that stage. We're definitely just at ODR. Who knows in the future? But at the moment, it's working just in the ODR space, which is great. We
might come back to, you know, before we sign off in a little while, to the AI and ChatGPT, which seems to be that little ghost hovering in the background. But you've indicated some of the things you've taken out, some of the things you need to put in. And I suppose one of the things that New Zealand is known for is its informality. And so you've said that, and mediation is supposed to be an informal process too. Although it has acquired its formality. So that has its appeal. Now, how long has it been set up, your ODR system?
Just over a year since we started. So we started a pilot and now it's we're just keeping going. So it'll be a year and a half. Is that right, Isabel?
Yes, it was May 2021.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the questions that you asked yourself in the note you sent me here is, what would you do differently now if not so much if you were setting it up, but if you were talking to someone next door in the country next door, what would you say have been the key things you've learned about setting these things up?
I just say it was May 2022.
I was thinking it was 2022.
I thought we were a year out.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Yep. Well, I was actually thinking about this quote that I really like, and it's let everything happen to you. Beauty and terror, just keep going. No feeling is final. And it was a bit of a roller coaster. You know, we would come in some days and we would have hundreds of emails from people saying, what is this? What on earth is ODR? And why are you contacting us? And then other times we'd come in with all these amazing emails saying, this is great. Thank you for sorting this for us. And then sometimes the platform seemed to be really intuitive, and sometimes it seemed to, we'd be going, what's going on? We can't log in. And there were so many ups and downs, and keeping going with the flow. So what would we do differently? I think the team, what worked really well for us is that we're a small team and we talked all the time. And so we've got six people at the commission at the time, and we were all participating in how the platform was going to be built and what was happening. And we met all the time and talked about it, and everyone knew what to do and everyone was pitching in, and that made all the difference for how we worked together. And we met with iMediation twice weekly to keep things moving along, and that worked really well.
I think I was just saying that one of the big improvements was when our customer service people reread our letters, and because they have the most contact with our public stakeholders, they really improve the language to decomplex it.
Oh, super.
Yeah.
And as you both indicated, it's a living beast.
Yes.
Which is also kind of exciting, but also probably a little bit terrifying at times, not quite knowing where it's going. Can I circle back to something you particularly began with, Kerry, which is and something we've discussed, and I've discussed with other mediators around town, is how we build cultural practice and cultural values into our dispute resolution processes, and particularly in the online space. Because one of the assumptions early on was the kind of online space was neutral, it was culturally blind, which isn't the case.
No.
How have you gone about that?
I don't think we've got that sorted, to be honest. Yeah, I think we're still learning, and we need to make some improvements in that space. Mm-hmm. So when we're doing our next iteration, we will be consulting with our Māori design group here at Internet New Zealand on how to make some improvements there and what changes need to be made. I think we didn't do consultation with Māori before the platform was built, and that was something that we missed. We also didn't think about how our service would work for other like people who might be visually impaired. So general access to an ODR service, how could we make it better for everybody and all cultures? So that's something we need to improve on.
One of the early podcast conversations was with a colleague who has specifically dealt with access for people with disabilities. And even thinking, imagine yourself if you don't have the capacity to touch a keyboard or to hear what's going on or see the screen. Those design issues are so important. And of course, the other side, the other cultural side of it here in New Zealand, and I've no doubt Australia, Canada, many other places, it's not just one or two main cultures, but because of migration, so we've got multiplicity of cultures and of languages to address. I think what that's done for us generally in dispute resolution, and now specifically in ODR, is to open that toy box and realize that we've actually got a lot more to work with, and it's a much more inclusive way of thinking about dispute resolution and design than certainly I grew up with when going through law school. Which was quite a long time ago. Middle of the last century sometime. there's a question that you've raised also, which is about where the next mediations are coming from. Where are the young people? What's the profile of your current set of mediators?
Well, our mediators are incredibly experienced and have a lot of experience in the dispute resolution world, and I think I would say, they're all legally trained. I think that the ODR would be a good fit for, young mediators coming through. Yeah. They're pretty au fait with technology. And I have been thinking about, this is not a new thought for me, this is quite a few years, about how we bring in young mediators and give them opportunities to get some experience under their belt as mediators and as practitioners, because it's not easy to get started.
It is not.
And we talk a lot about diversity. Well, it feels like we talk a lot about diversity, but there's diversity of, gender, but there's also diversity in age and backgrounds when you're coming into a dispute resolution world. And it's easy when we get into dispute resolution just to finally make it and get our career underway. And then, and forget about, there's a whole lot of other people behind us who, can come into the fold as well. And dispute resolution should be growing. It should be the way we're going forward rather than that's my opinion, obviously, rather than the court processes. And how can we bring those on? Because a lot of the people that we're working with in the dispute resolution world are young people as well. And young people have lots to teach us too, and they might have completely different ideas about how to run a mediation, and we can learn a lot from them too. So
that suggests some sort of mentoring system as well, because that's how I got into business years ago, by basically rolling up to a dispute resolution centre in Honolulu, in Hawaii, and saying, "Hello, I'm here to be an apprentice." And they were terribly surprised about that, but very welcoming. But there wasn't anything other than there was no training, and mentoring is what got me there. And that's what we can pass down to others, and because they kind of snap at our heels, and it's very welcoming to see mediators coming through.
That's
one thing on the horizon, and those young ones we're looking forward to sort of taking over from us. The other thing that might take over from us that you alluded to in your note is AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we finish on an optimistic or a pessimistic note here, Kerry, as well?
Well, I think it's a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, I mean, I also think that people need human interaction as well.
Yeah.
There is something about the human connection that we all need.
Yeah. And even human interaction, which is mediated via a video screen, such as...
Even via a video screen. There's something about being heard and being listened to and telling your story that's important, even if it's not the outcome part, but the being heard, the connection that cannot be done through AI, that I think is important in the dispute that we do in dispute resolution. Yeah, Isabel, your thoughts?
Yeah, it doesn't fall within an algorithm as such, but for the few people who did use the e-negotiation tool, I think some of them liked the quick and business-like approach. So what I've taken from it is, especially with the conflicted names, the parties often had never met each other, so they didn't necessarily have that emotional issue between each other that meant that face-to-face, even through online conferencing, was necessary to them. So what I'm saying is perhaps for different types of disputes and different types of relationships, a different tool is optimal.
Yeah, and it may be at some point in the system you're operating something like Smart Settle, which is an automated blind bidding system, could work. But at this stage, AI is, it's there, but it's not part of your system. So we can I mean, you're fully human focused at the moment, which
we are. We are.
That seems like a wonderful note to end on, because I see now I've taken more of your time than I said I would. So thank you both for taking the time and giving it your time for this podcast series. It's been terrific to talk to you both, and I look forward to hearing more about how the process and system develops over the course of the next months and years. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Yeah, it's been a delight talking to you.
This podcast has been brought to you by iCoder, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about iCoder or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.